Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Best Ever You Show. I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, here with Marnie Jameson, who is an author with HCI, among many other things that you do. But I'm going to just hold up your book. You can hold up your book, too, if you want.
Oh, I've got one right here.
Right Size Today to Create Your Best Life Tomorrow. Great book. That's a great pick. I'm going to screenshot this when we're done. But welcome. Thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And we should have some fun. We do want to let you know that we're both getting over colds. The dogs may bark. The doorbells may ring. There may be deliveries. We're both from home. Hey, but we're here, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So tell me all about your book. Let me go back a little bit, because you're a columnist. You have syndicated columns in newspapers and all sorts of stuff. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that before we go into your book?
Yeah. So I just celebrated my 20th anniversary of writing a weekly column, which seems impossible. But that's 1,040 columns and haven't missed a deadline. And, you know, along the way, I've written about everything, lifestyle, it's home design, home improvement, home life. I don't see where they really differentiate. But I wrote a series of columns in early, like 2013, 2012, about my parents moving into assisted living. And it was a horrible time, of course. And they just weren't, you know, mom was getting dementia. Dad was having trouble breathing. He had, you know, had some smoking in the service. Anyway, and they had this huge house. And my brother took care of finding them an assisted living place. And I was in charge of selling the family home and clearing it out. And at the time, I lived in Florida and this house was in California. So I was working at a newspaper, took a week off my day job, parachuted in, figured I can get this done, no time flat. And I did not realize what a huge undertaking it was and how emotional it was. And I started writing about it. And little did I know that tripped an entire series of experiences and books. So after that, I wrote a book called, and I interviewed experts for my column. So it wasn't just me. I interviewed estate salespeople and antiques experts and grief counselors and real estate people. And just really tried to circle the wagons and get the expertise I needed and then channel it into something that maybe my readers could use too. And I kept getting emails from my readers saying, oh, I'm saving all these columns into a collection. So then I called my agent. I said, I think I have a book here. And here we are. So Downsizing the Family Home was the first of the series. And then a workbook followed that. And then I was going through my own remodeling of my life. And my marriage wasn't working out after 20 some years. It was sad, but real. And I had to move on. And I moved from Colorado to Florida. I'm downsizing, I'm upsizing. I become a live-in home stager. I'm living in high-end homes with my furniture and moving every time they sell. So I lived in 6 houses in 4 years, which is a lot of purging. And I realized what I really didn't need. So this is giving me more expertise, right? And then I meet my dream man, and we got married 8 years ago, and he was a widower. And so he had a fully loaded house. And I think my stuff's really hot, especially since I have been the one editing it down to the very, very bones. And he had different opinions. So that's when I wrote Downsizing the Blended Home, when two houses become one, because it isn't always so beautiful. So then I wrote a book after that, as a publisher requested that I write a book about legacy leaving, like what to do with all your stuff when you die. So people can figure out their finances and they can figure out their trusts and wills, but what about their furniture? The kids fight and never speak to each other again, and things aren't worth what they think it's worth. And so I wrote a book called What to Do with Everything You Own to Leave the Legacy You Want, which is a big, huge wind up to say, Elizabeth, that I had kind of gotten tired of writing about aging, which is downsizing in you know, the family home sense. And also about dying, which is the leaving the legacy part.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm over this. I want to write about living for now, you know, the 55 plus group, and having a really great life after, you know, the kids are out of the nest and you have either you can work remotely. And so I really thought about right size. Like a lot of people stay stuck in their homes because they live there because they were close to a job they no longer have or to schools their kids no longer go to. And they have this attic full of Cub Scout uniforms and they just feel kind of entrenched. And it's a terrible, terrible thing to be weighted down by in the wrong place because of your stuff. So I wrote a book about where should you live? Just let's dream a little bit. And a lot of people upsize. 1/3 of people over 58 who buy homes buy a bigger home. So I'm not about downsizing. It's about figuring it out. So a long-winded way of saying that's what brought me to Right Size Today. And I just really wanted to figure out how to dial in that last third of life really beautifully and live well and with intention.
Yeah. And that is this book, right? Right Size
Today. That's right.
What's your website so people know?
Thank you. It's Marnie Jamieson, Marnie with an I, no E, and Jamieson like the whiskey with an E, no I, .com.
Okay. So people can go there. This is a cool book. Now we're in the, I'm just going to, you know, there's a lot of people, I'm sure they're in my phase right now, that we have four sons. They're 23, 25, 27, and 29. So everything's in the house. Their rooms are their rooms, still the same. Their baby books and bins and toys and everything is downstairs. Mm-hmm. Nothing's really changed. Because everybody's in and out of college and stuff like that. So we're ground central, you know, kind of like Grand Central Station sort of still. So that, to me, not a great time to like be making decisions like this, because that seems like it would be disruptive as all heck. So what kind of, and some people do, the second the kids graduate from high school, they're like, we're downsizing. So we have not done that. We have kids in college. We've had all four in college. All sorts of stuff going on. The youngest two graduate from Georgetown University in May with their master's degrees.
Congratulations.
Yep. One's over in Germany playing baseball. They're everywhere right now, but still people kind of come back here. For right now, we only have one moved out with his apartment. Everybody else is in and out.
You have three in.
So we have four boys. One is older and he's moved out and has a job, and everybody else is finishing up school. So when they're on breaks and things like that, they live here, their rooms, you know, they come back here.
Mm-hmm. You're not ready to change.
I don't think so.
No, no. Your house is functioning really well for you for where it is right now.
It feels like
another foot is falling.
Accumulation of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the garage is just stuff and the downstairs is stuff. And my husband and I are like, we've got to clear a little bit. But I don't feel like we're quite ready to like downsize our house or anything like that just yet.
No. But so you bring up a really good point, is that right sizing is not a one and done kind of thing. It's an ongoing process. And wherever you live, how big a home and whatever stage of life you're in, there's no excuse. You really should be editing all the time, all the time. So in your case, I would enlist the boys and say, okay, I want to gather all the stuff, and it's maybe sentimental, but we don't need your first grade coloring book anymore, and you're out of your Cub Scout uniforms, and you know, let's talk about this, and really kind of literally put it in their camp. I would almost put it in their rooms. And they're like, well, Mom, I don't want all these boxes. We've got a garage. Deal with it. Sell it, give it away, winnow it down, and figure it out. And then you can have this much of the garage or whatever you want to for every, but start getting the young men, because they're 23 and up, to take ownership and responsibility of their things without, you know, you're not pushing them out of the nest. You're just saying, help us, because it's a burden. The burden will fall to you. Believe me, my parents only had an 1800 square foot house, but it was packed in California with no basement. But it was packed to the gills. I never thought it would stop giving up its contents. And, you know, I don't blame them, but it was so much. So you're doing them a favor by starting to go through and then live by example, start going through some of your old scrapbooks and your old things, and really start paring back and paring down and simplifying and living lighter.
Yeah, but for those listening, as you're paring back and so forth, what are you doing with that? Are you having sales? Are you donating it to Goodwill? What are you doing with your stuff? Or what do you recommend people do with their stuff?
Great question. So if you can sell it, sell it. If you can donate it, donate it. I just finished writing a column that I stumbled into on donating things, your sheets, your any scrap fabrics, if you happen to be a crafter, your old towels, luggage that you don't use anymore. And the places that want them, there's a huge worldwide Lutheran church effort. You don't have to be religious to do this, but find the nearest Lutheran church, and they have quilters, and they're making quilts for people in Ukraine who've lost their homes and who need blankets, for kids in Tanzania who it actually is really cold there and they don't have very many clothes, and all their food they eat is going to keep them warm, and they're dying of malnutrition and they're not growing to their full potential. because they need to be warm. So the quilts are going to these kids. And I'm like, I have these sheets that I hate in my closet. They could be helping kids in Tanzania. So your dog, your towels can be going to a pet rescue. They need to wash these animals when they get them off the streets, clean them up. They need towels. They need towels for bedding. They'll be perfect for that. The luggage goes to foster homes because these foster kids are traveling around with trash bags of clothes. It's super sad. So give them like a cosmetic kits that you're not using, or and you know, those little zipper things you get for free when you buy a lipstick. So, you know, these are ways. So that makes my heart feel good to know exactly what's happening. But if you don't have time to individualize, at least start donating to the Goodwill. If you have something that you think is especially nice, I just worked with I had a French tapestry. It sounds bougie, but it wasn't like invented or anything. It was just something I bought 30 years ago. But I was over the tapestry look. I'm moving into something a little more contemporary. And I found a furniture concierge, which you can look up. And they will sell items for you for a commission if they're higher value items. And she found a French collector who bought it and she took a commission and I got the rest of the cash. So it's too much trouble is an excuse, but it's not a good excuse.
Yeah.
Right. It's too much trouble. You can get rid of everything you have. You can. There's a place for it, and responsibly and reasonably. So, but it's what stumps people.
What if you're looking around going, but I like all my clutter, you know, what if you're really like partial to every knickknack that you have and you don't want to donate it or give it away or whatever, what do you do?
Well, there's, if you have the room for it, I mean, it is not commonly looked on as nice looking. I mean, you might, if you care how your house looks, you might step back and say, if I walked into my house, would I say, oh, everything's adorable? Or would I say, this looks pretty cluttered? So if you care, I do, how things look, then you might want to edit them, maybe rotate them. But I think I like to say a little bit of great beats a lot of mediocre. So if you can just pick the few really cherished things that are fantastic and let the others fade into the background, you might find your quality of life is going up, your visual quality of life is going up. And maybe put those second-rate things in a box and live without them for 3-4 months and see if you're really dying without them. And then you open them up and you're like, you know what? Oh, I'm over these. I don't need these anymore. It might help you do a trial separation before you
find trial separation. That's cute. Let's talk more about your book, just a little bit more in depth about your book. Do you have a favorite chapter? Why did you write this? You could talk more about that, or you could talk, you know, in depth what's in the book. Like, I love page 132, 6 ways to live better with less.
That is the holy grail, isn't it? Well, I like the way it's organized. And it starts off, you may have done the exercises. So I like to think about right sizing as figuring out where in this whole world you should live. Maybe wherever you are is right where you should be. Once you figure out where in the world, and I'll talk a minute about that, what in your 4,000 square foot house or a one bedroom apartment, like in what? And then with what is the third part of how to right size. And that's once you have the right house in the right place, don't junk it up. Put only the right things in it, and we'll talk about that. So the where is, I have a little exercise that you can do, and you don't have to multiply any higher than 5, but it is a little bit of math. And you write down there's a whole questionnaire about what's important to you, like you being near family and all your family's there. So you wouldn't pick up and move to another country when your world is here. But what if your kids, I mean, I've got kids in 5 kids in 4 states. So where do I live?
And that's what I'm worried about. That's exactly
what happens.
Now I'm ahead right there. I'm like, okay. So I feel like I'm kind of like in this holding pattern.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you don't, my kids have already kind of started to, well, the youngest hasn't, but I have 3 stepchildren and they're well on their way. And my older daughter is working in Colorado and I'm in Florida and she's a veterinarian and she's about to have a baby and she's married. So she's kind of like there. The other one's still wrapping up school as well as your younger ones. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, I can't live in all the places. So
no, I'm like, I can't live everywhere where all four of you live. So what am I to do?
There's only so much Marnie to go around. So, yeah. But what is important to you? Like, for some people it's being on the golf course. For some people it's walking to the theater. For some people it's seeing water. For some people it's being as close to their church or socially and emotionally connected to their community. So it depends on what's right for you. And so we can all read the retirement magazines and magazines galore on best places to live, best places to retire, or whatever. But I'm not average. You're not average. This helps you decide what's best for you. Some people want to move to colder climates. Some people want four seasons. Some people want warmer weather. Some people, 7% of people want to move farther from family. That's all I'm going to say about that. So, you know, it's a questionnaire that you get to figure out where, and you list like four, however many cities you're considering, and then figure out which one actually measures up to be the place that has most of what you want. So that's the where. And I think the exercises are really important. And if you're with a partner, obviously both of you do them and hopefully you'll align and maybe figure out. My brother just moved, he and his wife just moved from, they're in the book, from Southern California, where he's lived all his life, to Michigan. So that's different. And they're really excited about it and they're having a great time. So anyway, where, and then what size house. And I define right sizing, which I think is important, as moving to or creating, in your case, creating a home that's the perfect physical and size, emotional, social, and financial fit. So yep. All four of those pieces have to click. So by social, I mean, you've got friends, you've got the things you like around you, you've got the ballet or whatever it is that matters to you. And emotional is, are you around neighbors who support you emotionally, or at your same stage in life and near your family and your loved ones? So all of that matters, and it's different for every person.
Yeah. Do you, this is a question about houses, just specific to houses. Have you ever heard, but you don't move out of that house, I'd like the house when I get older. You know, like,
well, that's wonderful. And if that works for your family,
we've got that going on too. Like, yeah, this is, and where it's interesting where it's coming from too. It's coming from, in our lifetime, I don't think we're ever going to own a home. They're so expensive now. And interest rates are so high. There's a little bit of that going on. I'm like, oh, relax a little bit on that. But they're also like, this is the house we grew up in. This is that. And the youngest one is like, that's my house.
Well, isn't that lovely? And I'm sure that would just not fit very well with the other three. So it seems to me, and I'm now married to a lawyer who has this all figured out, because I would not have thought it through. And that's why I wrote What to Do with Everything You Own, to leave the legacy you want, is the fighting that happens after the fact. And I, you know, you look to me like you've got a few good years left, Elizabeth. So I wouldn't be in a big hurry to say, well, wait a minute. So maybe with the way you do it is say, you know, this house will be part of a trust to the kids, a land trust, and you can create that and divide it four ways. And it's, yeah, and each one of you can take, this is going to be quite a nice asset. Even if you and your husband decide to downsize, you can still put the proceeds in a trust that would be useful for the kids to have a down payment someday. But unless all four kids agree that Jamie should have the house, I think you're setting up yourself and the kids for a lot of acrimony afterward.
Yeah, there's fighting that goes on with
people. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everything.
There are.
Yeah. No, I hear it. Okay. What else do you want to talk about? Do you have a favorite part of your book?
Oh, I didn't finish my three parts. I got all hung up on the first one, figuring out where you want to go. Second part I do like is stories of people who actually did it. So I interview the examples of people who've moved and right-sized, and some backfired, some stuck the landing, what they thought about, how it worked out, and in variations and very walks of life, places, upsize, downsize. One person sold their big house and got two houses, one in their community and one closer to kids. So I love that, like how they did it. I think that's really important.
I like that idea. Then, oh, sorry.
Yeah. No. And then the last section, maybe that is where my heart is. And I'd be honest with you, I actually wanted that to be the book, is buy it once, buy it right. Is once you get the right house in the right place, don't fill it with junk and clutter. Get the right everything. And I go through every room in the house and talk about how to choose the essentials, the kitchen cutting knives, the wine glasses, the cutlery in the bedroom, the mattress, the sheets, the bed linens, the pillows in the bathroom, the soap, the towels. I go through the whole house, and it's what the takeaway is that I don't give brands. I very rarely talk about what brand to buy, but I teach the properties to look for when buying an item, because people's houses get cluttered because they don't buy things right the first time. They get a pan that keeps scorching their food, and then they buy the next pan they see on an infomercial and hope for a better result. And if they only knew what they were doing and why the pan was the problem and not them — I used to think it was me. It turns out it was my pan. I'm a much better cook now that I figured out what kind of pan to have. And then you can figure out which ones to get rid of, and you elevate your life and you live more simply, more beautifully, more elegantly, because you're surrounded with quality items, because you've learned the properties to look for when buying these things. So I really do like the last section a lot.
Yeah, I love it. Well, it has been just absolutely lovely speaking with you. This is a really much needed book for a lot of different ways. I know one of the things just between you and me that we, well, it's in my book too, but that we did was, we are leaving Maine winters and we spend the winter in South Carolina now.
Ooh. So is this, are we talking to you in Maine right now?
Yeah, I'm in Maine right now, which we're, okay, of course, expecting a huge snowstorm tomorrow and the next day, which is funny. But yeah, we did last year, we did this too. We didn't quite stay in South Carolina long enough. But we've been doing this for years now. And it first started out as like a week and then 2 weeks. And now it's like a full 8 weeks. And we're down there and we leave for a bunch of months and just hang out. And so that has sort of, you know, scratch the itch or itch the scratch, whatever, for moving or whatever it is. Cause I don't feel like moving yet. I feel like everybody comes back here, but, it's complicated, isn't it? It's a really complicated topic.
It is. It is. And it's very emotional. And I think that the thing that turns around is that it's about you instead of just generic articles about where should you retire, or, you know, where should you have a second home? Because this is about how it works for you. And that's very different. Nobody's average.
In my case, we've been married 25 years. So it almost seems like I need two copies of the book to work, one for him, one for me, to kind of like work through it as we go, kind of thing.
So use a pencil and erase.
And this is, my husband's pretty open-minded and everything, but what do you do if you have a partner or someone around you that is like, we're not throwing out anything or donating anything. We're not moving. We're not, you know, their heels are in the ground. No, everything's staying the way it is.
Huh. That's rough. There's often one's a keeper, one's a tosser. I would say when I married my husband, he was a bit of a slob, and he can be. I mean, I looked at how he lived and how I lived. And by the way, my place was show ready when I was staging homes, show ready to buyers from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. Right. I mean, there wasn't even a wet towel. It was perfect. And I walk into his place, there's piles on the counter of everything, mail everywhere. And I said, I require neatness. I don't just like order. I require it to function and to feel well. And I can't live like this. So we negotiate it. Now it's too late for you, but if you're marrying a lawyer, you do the negotiating before you get married. But I will say, you know, you can say, honey, I require, or maybe you're the hoarder. I don't know. I require.
No, I'm the tosser. Certain things that I really love and collect and things like that. But in general, I'm the, like, I can't handle clutter. And he's way more of the keeper, like the way more of the, I can't lose that piece of string. I'll need it someday. You know, you're going to thank me one day when you need that cord or whatever, you know, that type. Drives me crazy with cords and
Maybe you can house that is his domain. He can have his little, save his dental floss or whatever he wants to do. And you can have yours. And maybe you live by example and you show by example how much, because that's what happened in my situation. You realized how nice it was to live simply and cleanly, and not that we're perfect by any stretch, but it was a start. And then also maybe do the trial separation thing. Say, honey, I know you're really attached. Like, well, my husband has an old roll top desk. It's hideous. I finally got it into like some place upstairs that nobody sees but him. But it was the first thing he bought out of law school. Like, he had hard-earned money. He bought a desk. He thought it was, but you know, there's no getting rid of it. But at least I've pushed it away into a place that we can both, you know. But ask him if there are things that he's attached to that you can maybe just put in the garage for a little while. Just try to live without it and see if your world falls apart. If your world falls apart, we'll bring it back. But let's give it a try. So sometimes that trial separation is the way to go.
Yeah, I love that. That's good advice. Anyway, all right, it was so great to meet you.
You too. Thank you.
One more time.
MarnieJameson.com. Okay. And you can join my blog for free. Every Monday, you'll get my column.
Perfect. And then here's your book, everybody. Right Size Today to Create Your Best Life Tomorrow. And all authors love reviews on Amazon and reviews on Barnes & Noble and Goodreads and all those things. So I love that part of our community where we, you know, have somebody like you on and we support them, buy their book, give them reviews and things like that. So hopefully my crowd will show up for you. And
thanks, guys.
But anyway, all right. Thanks for being here. It was so great.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening and watching. Take care.